Association of America presents The Magic Key. Magic Key turns, and the family of RCA join in presenting over the coast-to-coast NBC Blue Network an hour of distinguished entertainment featuring Kirsten Flagstaff, world-famous soprano of the Metropolitan Opera Company, Doc Rockwell, America's merry, mad doctor of nonsense, the fascinating rhythms of the Three Pickens sisters, the original Dixieland band, pioneers of swing music, John B. Kennedy, NBC news commentator, and a special broadcast from Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, and Frank Black and the NBC Concert Orchestra, who opened the program with a dance of the Camorrists from Wolf Ferrari's Jewels of the Madonna.
Thank you. year in radio is a long time. Stars come and go in rapid succession as styles and ideas change with the turn of each new season. The three lovely Pickin sisters have seen many changes in radio since they introduced their fascinating style of rhythm 6 years ago. It was then that the Pickin sisters, fresh from Georgia, found a quickly appreciative audience for their intriguing harmonies. Stage and screen appearances have won them even greater popularity. The magic key of RCA turns to Jane, Helen, and Patty, who comprise radio's youthful but veteran harmony trio, the famous Pickin sisters. The Pickin sisters have selected for their first number an original arrangement of Midnight Blue, one of the songs in which Jane Pickens has starred in the new Ziegfeld Follies.
When I met you, and soon this heart of mine was beating like thunder under the midnight blue. Midnight blue has painted shadows on our rendezvous. I couldn't see as I beheld you in wonder. And like a crown upon your head, love was strong. Far away the music played, I heard a sweetheart serenade being sung. Love was yours. Oh, midnight blue. And then I found myself caressing you. I found my heaven in the spell I was under the midnight
The three Pickin sisters from Georgia demonstrate their harmony again with their own version of Mummy Nez, an ever-popular rumba.
Oh, was far as the light. The gun gave my life the next week for. On fire, I was ready. It was like the car for more than one.
For many years, the filaments of electric light bulbs were made of carbon. The early carbon filament electric light bulb became outmoded with the discovery of the modern, highly efficient metal filament for electric light. In turning to metal to produce radio tubes, RCA engineers have made just such a forward step, for RCA metal tubes are more accurately and sturdily constructed with shorter leads, quieter operation, and greater efficiency on short waves. When you buy your next radio, make sure that it is a really modern set, one equipped with RCA metal tubes.
With the Olympic Games over, and the track, field, and swimming trophies safe in America for another 4 years, with new champions crowned in the realm of tennis, a new golf champion chosen yesterday, and polo drawing to the end of its season, the eyes of all sport lovers turned to the forthcoming World Series baseball game. Yesterday, the Giants moved forward another step toward the National League pennant with a victory over Brooklyn. And it is practically certain now that the Giants will have the enviable job of dueling it out with the Yankees for a World Championship. This afternoon at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, where the Giants are playing again today, John B. Kennedy, NBC commentator, will give us a few highlights on the forthcoming series. The magic key of RCA turns to John B. Kennedy at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn.
Good afternoon, all. Here we are in one of the great ballparks of the country, the clubhouse at Ebbets Field, Brooklyn. The jaunty Giants league leaders are up against the doughty Dodgers, although the Dodgers this season have dodged the high standing they used to have. But ball clubs have their ins and outs, their ups and downs, even as you and I. We know baseball is a national pastime, but here in Brooklyn you see signs that it can be a local epidemic. The bleachers are packed. Lines are forming to right and left in the slanting sun. And the game is still an hour away.
Attention! Valerie!
That's Babe Hamburger, the Brooklyn announcer, testing his tonsils. Peanut stand engineers are all in their places. The hot dogs are barking. And the mixed fragrance of mustard, coffee, and Pop would make a blind man know he was in a ballpark. Ever since Pop Anson and his Wonder Boys developed the game from the old English pastime of rounders, ever since infielders wore whiskers, baseball has grown to be the game with the greatest following of any sport in the world. Football and golf have huge followings, although if golf were an indoor game, only lunatics would play it. But baseball reigns supreme as the sport of mass interest, and here in one of baseball's temples.
That sounds highbrow for a ballpark.
Well, Mr. Casey Stengel. Casey Stengel, you know, ball fans, is the well-known successor to old Wilbert Robinson as Brooklyn's manager. The experts thought Casey and his club might check the Giants' rush to the pennant.
Well, the experts, like ballplayers, make their mistakes.
Well, supposing it seems likely, Casey, the Giants get the National League pennant, I wonder what you think will happen if the Giants and Yankees meet in another World Series.
Do you mind if I just don't think? I've got to lecture these ballplayers of mine. I'll say this, that if Hubble is in top form, the Yankees are going to have a tough time.
Well, thanks, Casey. Here's the oldest man in the National League.
I'm Daniel J. Comerford, property man of the Dodgers. I've been in the National League 32 years, and man and boy, I've seen more ballplayers come and go than any of the fans.
What do you like best about baseball, Dan?
The game the best.
What do you like least?
The guys that swipe the foul balls.
Oh, I see. Who are you?
I'm the Dodger mascot.
What's your name?
Mo Breitbart.
What do you do as mascot?
Well, I just mascot. When the team wins, I'm the guy who brought up the breaks.
And what do you do when the team loses?
I duck.
Oh, the turnstiles click as the crowds roll in. The players are warming up. And here is one of the foremost authorities and one of the most fearless officials of organized baseball, umpire Ernie Quigley.
Thank you, John. I know it does my heart good to see thousands trying to get into a ballpark when the game to be played isn't what you might call vital to the home team, at least.
Well, you've seen the game grow and you've grown with it, Ernie. Do you feel the same enthusiasm for the game when you're umpiring out there now as you did in the old days?
just as much. New generations of fans come along just as we have new generations of ball players.
You've got just about as much fame as a football official as a major league umpire, Ernie. Which game gives you the harder test, football or baseball?
An official can have some tough spots on the gridiron, too, particularly when he's watching a scrimmage at the touchdown line. But I think the hardest test as a sports official is to be an umpire during a World Series, having to decide in the tenth of a second on a ball or a strike, or whether a runner is safe or out. A World's Championship, as well as thousands of dollars, can depend upon that decision. I have made many a one, and they're all tough to make.
Ernie, I've often wondered what words pass between catcher and pitcher at those infield conferences they have between pitches.
Well, let's find out. Here's Babe Phelps, the Brooklyn catcher, and Max Butcher, the Brooklyn pitcher, meeting midfield.
Listen, guy, keep him low on that fastball or you'll be knocked out of the park.
Yeah, I can find that bunch of hands of the basketball.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Where do you bury your dead?
Why, is that what happens at a conference? Then what happens when a ball player battles an umpire?
Well, we enforce discipline, a thing I always hate to do, but it must be done for the sake of the game. And the umpire's authority is always upheld, as it should be.
Still, it must put you in a tough spot when you have to send somebody to the showers.
No, John, it's the player himself who puts himself in a tough spot. Although in the excitement of a hard-fought game, we overlook flare-ups. And sometimes the boys are great kidders. One famous player once rushed at me after I'd called him out at first base. He swung his arms and glared and shrieked. The fans thought I was just about to be slaughtered. But all that player was what he said to me. Ernie, that clock on the fence is 10 minutes fast. Slow it up.
Well, I've seen you umpire in games where the crowd stormed at close decisions.
Well, rooters even are more excited than players. But we officials can only do our duty.
To call them as you see them.
No, John, to call them as they are.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sometimes spectators are more bothersome than players.
Yes, they are. I recall one excitable lady fan shouting once at a famous player as he rounded the bases after walloping a home run.
Was that Babe Ruth?
I won't say who it was. The lady fan shouted, "If I were your wife, I'd give you poison."
What did the player say?
He shot back, "If you were my wife, I'd take it."
Why, the ladies are coming to this game in legion.
Yes, that attractive young woman there is a ball player's wife.
Oh, indeed. May I mention your name?
I'd rather not.
Well, tell me, what does a ball player's wife think about when he's in there in the field in action?
Principally about what he'll want for his dinner after the game.
Oh, I see. Well, that's always worth thinking of. Ernie, whom would you rate as the greatest player of all time?
I wouldn't attempt to rate him, John. Look at the record.
Why, yes, names like Wagner, Matheson, Johnson, Cobb, Ruth. What a record. Then what would you rate as the greatest club of all time?
Well, I can't do that either. The old Baltimore Orioles, Stallings, Boston, Braves, Miracle Men, the old Dodgers, the great Giants of McGraw's day, the Yankees of Miller Huggins' time, great teams, all of them. But our present-day good teams are comparable to any of these. Again, John, look at the record.
And it's a great record of fine athletes. Wellington once said that the Battle of Waterloo was won on the playing fields of Eton. Then the battles of this republic will be won on the baseball diamonds of America.
John, when was that Battle of Waterloo?
1815, Ernie. Look at the record. The Magic Key of RCA returns you to Radio City.
Invented swing music, and who invented jazz? No two questions could arouse more answers, for the claims and counterclaims to these two questions already fill volumes. Nick LaRocca, leader and founder of the original Dixieland Jazz Band, credits his orchestra with the invention of both jazz and swing music. He backs these claims with tangible proof that dates back to 1908, when he and his four fellow musicians were playing a weird combination of instruments in New Orleans. Trombone, cornet, clarinet, piano, and drums comprised the instrumentation from which came the exotic sound that rocketed the quintet to fame. The term jazz music was applied first to their strange and original compositions such as Tiger Rag, Aggravating Papa, and The Ostrich Waltz. That the Dixieland Jazz Band was the pioneer of swing arose from the fact that not one of its five members could read music. Forgetting the melody, they improvised it or faked. And it was this invention that gave their music the ad-lib quality known as swing. Illness of the leader, Nick LaRocca, caused the orchestra to disband in 1926. But last winter it was reorganized and enlarged around a nucleus of its original members, and today it is again prominent in the orchestral field. the magic key of RCA turns to the original Dixieland band in one of their own compositions, Blue in the Blues, as they recently recorded it for Victor. The original Dixieland band adapted its distinctive style to a modern bit of music. Here's Love in Your Eye from the forthcoming picture, The Big Broadcast of 1937. Here's a real treat for followers of swing music. One of the oldest and most famous swing tunes, directed by its composer, Nick LaRocca, and played by the original Dixieland band in the version they recently recorded for Victor. The ever-popular Tiger Rags.
In the course of history, certain families have distinguished themselves. In American politics and law, there are the Adams and Taft families, the Mayos in surgery and medicine, the Astors in business and finance, and in the theater, we have the famous Barrymore family. Individuals or groups of individuals knit together by ties of belief or unity of purpose can, by united effort and united service, do more important and better work. Such a group is the family of RCA, the distinguished family of radio. Universal Radio Service is the bond of unity that knits this great family together. For its members, individually and collectively, offer you outstanding advantages in every phase of radio. Businessmen and women find in the communication service of RCA the fastest and most direct means of radio telegraph contact with foreign countries and between large cities of the United States. All America looks to the National Broadcasting Company, the broadcasting service of RCA, for the best in radio entertainment. In the field of manufactured products, sound motion picture equipment, radios, phonographs, and phonograph records, RCA Victor offers the fruit of 36 years of research and unparalleled resources. These advantages are reflected in the new 1937 RCA Victor Magic Voice radios, acclaimed by outstanding musical authorities to be man's greatest triumph in the reproduction of sound. RCA Victor radios also feature the Magic Brain, Magic Eye, and Metal Tubes. Every step any member of the family of RCA takes is made on the authority of sound scientific research. Truly a family distinguished in the unity of effort. That is why it is to your advantage to heed the suggestion for every service in radio, use RCA. Magic Key, unlocking a world of entertainment, presented for your interest and pleasure by the members of the family of RCA who, individually and collectively, offer you every service in radio.
Of the young and talented American composer Muriel Pollack, Frank Black and the NBC Concert Orchestra play her colorful Dance Español.
Thank you.
Once in every generation or two, nature seems to take the very essence of music and song and give it into the keeping of one fortunate human being. It did so in her generation with Melba, again with Caruso. It does so in ours with the great Flagstaff. Words describing art are ineffectual compared with art itself, so we won't attempt to use them. Enough for us to say that Madame Flagstaff, who has just completed a triumphant season at Salzburg, has consented to sing for us from Stuttgart, Germany, where this great Victor recording artist at this moment is preparing to leave for her concert season in America. The magic key of RCA turns, taking you 3,000 miles across the Atlantic Ocean to Madame Kirsten Flagstaff in Stuttgart, Germany.
Hello, hello, NBC. Stuttgart, Germany is calling. It indeed is like magic to have Madame Flagstaff here with us today. Only last night she was singing Isolde in Wagner's Tristan at the Prague Opera House. She retired 12:30, and this morning got up early to speed by motor car all through Central Europe. And here she is now in Stuttgart, Swabia's beautiful capital city, after a 300-mile drive, and it is our pleasure to introduce her to the audience at home. She will be accompanied by Otto Sonnen.
Hello, NBC. I will first sing for you Dich teure Halle of Richard Wagner's Tannhäuser. conclude, you will hear I Love You by Edvard Grieg, and I will sing it in Norwegian.
Hello, NBC. You have just heard Madame Kirsten Flagstad of the Metropolitan Opera in New York singing Dich teure Halle of Richard Wagner's Tannhäuser and I Love You by Edvard Grieg. The magic key of RCA returns you to New York City.
Our program continues from Radio City, headquarters of the family of RCA, one of whose members, the National Broadcasting Company, has nearly completed its 10th year of leadership in radio broadcasting.
When the world, like any individual in it, gets a pain in the neck, fallen arches, or sprouts a couple of wars, the best thing to do is to find if there's a doctor in the house. And that's what we've done, and he's here. We know the doctor as well as he knows himself. That isn't saying a lot, because he spent the better part of his life trying to catch up with himself, and he's always ended up by finding himself just around the next corner. But he is nevertheless a doctor of part. He has more degrees than any other doctor in the world. He got them from one of his own thermometers. The doctor's prescriptions are compounded in his own laboratory, which is an old-fashioned rocking chair. What goes into these prescriptions is a secret, even to the doctor. But the results are well known. They produce laughter. And laughter, this great savant has found, can cure any ill. the magic key of RCA turns to that famous inventor, writer, publisher, actor, humorist, and medical enigma, Doc Rothwell.
Continue my campaign to save the rocking chair and bring back those good old days when grandmother carried the family bankroll around in a bustle and was always behind in the rest. Now, ladies and gentlemen, up in Maine, I've got all the people up there rocking in Maine, and as Maine goes, so goes the nation. Of course, those things take time, and you can't be sure of finding a rocking chair in New York here yet. So that's why I brought my own rocking chair along here this afternoon, so I can sit down, relax, and kind of keep my mind clear in the midst of this bedlam, hubbub, and uproar that's prevailing in all these big cities today. I don't see how you folks are able to stand it. Why, it seems to me it's something terrific. It's no wonder that people are self-conscious and have no poise. And the more complicated things become, the less poise they have. An instance of that is up here in Ontario, this woman that had the quintuplet. There's a case of no poise. Only girls and five of them. And another thing about that. Five girls, and in that great big equipped nursery worth $450,000 of equipment, there's one, not one sign of a rocking chair. Are we going to see our little children grow up without rocking and go through life with stomachs full of gas?
No!
Of course we're not. We're not going to do a thing like that. The fact state taxes on gas is too high altogether today. And besides, they are appropriating those taxations for building roads instead of schoolhouses. I believe that every school teacher ought to be equipped with a rocking chair so she can sit down and realize what a mess this homework problem is.
Yeah.
Yes, there you are. This week all over this country, ladies and gentlemen, our schools open up. We kissed the little ones goodbye and saw them toddle away to school. And a few hours later, we saw them staggering back loaded down with 30 or 40 pounds of books and other homework. Is that developing their brains?
No.
Of course it's not. It's just ruining their arches. And what do they get out of all this? What do they get out of all this newfangled system of education? They don't even learn the old rudimental three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. When they go through high school, grammar school, and college, now what the three R's they come home with are radio, rhythm, and raccoon coat. Now the idea of that, folks, the trouble with all that is mostly on the fathers and not the mothers. The mothers today have their own problems to be working out. Right at this very time, out on the Pacific coast, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, and there are thousands of women out there looking through the front pages of magazines at those colored advertisements of food, working up big appetites for that Sunday dinner. While back here in the East, it's 2 o'clock and the women have already overloaded themselves with the Sunday dinners, and now they're looking in the back parts of the magazines, looking for the ads for indigestion and heartburn. Now, my friends, there is no need of any of you folks worrying about overeating if you rock and shake the food down. And another thing about rocking, if you rock, it drives the blood up into the brains and keeps your brain all clear. Now, I'm not speaking of guesswork. These are practical, scientifically proven facts. I've proved they're right because by rocking, it's how I am able to answer all these thousands of questions that come into me as the voice of asparagus. Any problem that you have, any problem, health, wealth, finance, business, or anything like that, just give me a ring and I'll be glad to answer it. There we are. There's one of the calls right now. Excuse me a minute, folks. Hello? Yes, Mrs. Hallett. I see your little boy doesn't like to taste the castor oil. Just a minute till I rock, Mrs. Hallett. Mrs. Hallett, you want to know what you can do with the castor oil so the little boy won't taste it? Yes. Just pour it down the sink. You're welcome, Mrs. Hallett. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you can figure anything out in the world by rocking. Why, I have a patient, a woman who bought a rocking chair and makes a very good living, just rocking back and forth, figuring out new names for Pullman cars. Here we are. The gently common bunch is here. Hello? Oh, yes? Yes, I can answer. Just a second. I have to rock on you. Yes, you want to know what causes mold. What makes mold, yes. Papa and Mama mold. All right, goodbye. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Ladies and gentlemen, not only are these good for answering questions, but the rocking chair is one of the greatest things in the world for any woman that wants to rock her little baby in her arms and by so doing it, have it go through life with little impressions that she makes while telling its stories. I'll never forget a story that my mother used to tell me when she'd rock me back and forth. Listen to this. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, ladies and gentlemen, there was a mean, mean old king called King Tightwad, and he had a little baby boy. And to show you how mean this king was, he used to paint luminous paint on the baby's nose at night so he could find its mouth in the dark and stick the nursing bottle in there without turning the light on and wasting electricity. And to still further show you how mean he was, when the little boy grew up to be a full-size prince, he gave distinct orders that the boy must be in the house every night by 10 o'clock, and if he wasn't, he threatened to disinherit him without a penny. Well, sir, the prince had a hard time of it, and lots of times it was a pretty close shave. Well, one day, the prince was galloping along out in the country by the side of a river when he heard screams. He parted the bushes, and there in the middle of the river, struggling in the water, was a poor old witch. Without taking a minute, the king or the prince rather plunged in, grabbed the witch, and brought her to shore. And there she stood there shaking away with only four teeth, which were pretty loose. And the more she shook, the more the teeth shook, and finally three of the teeth fell out altogether and left the poor old witch with only one tooth in her head. And you can realize that one tooth is not very much use, that is, unless you're an elf. Well, sir, the old witch thanked the prince very much for saving her life and told him that any time he was in trouble of any kind, that she would get him out of it. The prince thanked her and went away and forgot all about the old witch for 3 or 4 weeks till one night he had happened to go into the lunchroom to get an order of griddle cakes. When he was eating the cake and happened to look up in the clock, and there it was, 10 minutes to 10. He was supposed to be home, and there he was, away off of the castle. He dropped everything, rushed over to the counter, and says to the clerk, "Quick, give me my check." The clerk reached for the checkbook and hunted around, and of all things, ladies and gentlemen, the clerk couldn't find the punch. He had the check, but no punch, and there is the prince standing there with the hand of that clock getting nearer and nearer, 10 o'clock, and the clerk is looking around for the punch, and the prince is wondering what in the world is going to happen when suddenly there's a fluttering sound, and through the open window, who flies in but the old witch with one tooth? She punches the check by biting a hole in it. The prince pays his check, gets home in time, and years afterwards, when the old king dies, the prince gets the money. And ladies and gentlemen, like all good fairy stories, the prince finally married the witch's daughter, who grew up to look so exactly like her mother that the prince was never able to tell which was which. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you can see how those little details of that story have stuck in my memory all these years. And they've taught me the principle all these years to always be careful, be nice and courteous to any old woman who wants to, as you can never tell whether she's a witch or not. And I wish that all the mothers who are listening in today or are here would go out and buy rocking chairs. I realize that you can't buy rocking chairs many places today, and I've anticipated that. I have men all over the United States and Canada who are directing people where they can buy rocking chairs. Anytime that you're driving along the road and see a man with his arm up in the air, kind of motioning with his thumb, that's one of my men. Just follow him along. So that after this program is over, I'm going to ask you to just drive out in the country, look up one of my representatives, and help me bring back the rocking chair. Thank you.
Frank Black, General Musical Director of the National Broadcasting Company, selects a stirring Hungarian gypsy melody, Hungarian Dance No. 6, from the album of Johannes Brahms, to be played by the NBC Concert Orchestra. Thank you.
What gave to the voice of Caruso its amazing beauty and clarity? Music teachers will tell you that Caruso's ability to place his voice correctly was largely responsible. Sounds of any kind must be controlled and directed if the best effects are to be obtained. That's why experts everywhere hail the recent achievement of RCA Victor, the magic voice of radio. Perfected after long years of research by a marvelous combination of engineering development, RCA Victor Magic Voice radios represent the ultimate in the mechanical application of the same acoustic principles which characterize Caruso's magic voice. Now sounds coming from the speaker are completely controlled and directed. Now it becomes possible for a radio to produce the full, round, rich tones that create true room presence, the thrilling illusion that the artist is actually in the room with you. Even to one thoroughly versed in the subject, it would take many minutes to explain how RCA Victor has achieved this modern miracle of sound engineering. But seeing is believing, and so is hearing. And if you will call on your RCA Victor dealer tomorrow and ask for a demonstration of an RCA Victor Magic Voice radio, we believe that you will find the experience truly memorable, truly thrilling. For that amazing instrument, the 1937 RCA Victor Magic Voice radio with magic brain, magic eye, and metal tubes, is the result of 36 years' research, 36 years of striving toward the ideal of tone reproduction. There are other attractive models from $20 to $600. In fact, there are 28 great values under $100. Convenient payment terms can be arranged if you desire. We cordially invite you to be with us next Sunday afternoon on the NBC Blue Network, when the magic key will turn again and members of the family of RCA will present Paul Robeson, noted American baritone, in a broadcast from London, England, Caspar Reardon and his swing harp, the lovely voice of Jane Froman, John B. Kennedy, NBC commentator, and Frank Black and the NBC concert orchestra. This is Ben Grauer and Milton Cross speaking for the member of the family of RCA, the National Broadcasting Company.